Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman, author of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I'm an NFL outsider, but my evaluations of skill prospects has earned the attention of NFL insiders. For the next half hour, I'll share my process, analysis, and stories of the game within the game. Now this week, I'm doing something a little bit different to kick off this new podcast series, and that's some analysis of the skill prospects of the 2018 NFL Draft, and I profiled the first round yesterday. I'm going to look at the second and third round picks today so that we can have the release of this pod, you know, as you get prepared for the final day of the NFL draft. We're going to kick it off with a player who, you know, I'm unabashedly going to say he's my favorite player of this class, and he's been that way probably well before he was even, well before this draft, you know, probably last year or the year before, and that's Nick Chubb of the University of Georgia, now with the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, this is a bit of a story here, but let's just talk about Chubb's fit with Cleveland. First of all, you've got Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson. Now, let's remember that Carlos Hyde was brought in, you know, really to replace Isaiah Crowell, to add depth and veteran skill, someone that can come in and play right away. He's an underrated back with excellent footwork. He's quick. He can catch the ball better than you expect, and he can be powerful. So this is a guy that has proven that when he's healthy enough, that he can carry the load, and he did it on a team that was subpar in San Francisco. So he's, you know, he had some decent components of an offensive line there. He's going to come to a Cleveland team that also has some decent components of an offensive line. And if he is allowed to be on a team that can stay on schedule and allow him to, you know, put him in a situation where he can be at his best, he can be a strong player. Duke Johnson, he's in the final year of his contract. I think he's also an underrated player between the tackles, but he has more functional power. He's going to be labeled most of the time and seen around the league as a scat back, third down back, receiving back. You know, he in his final year, you got to look at the fact that Matt Days is on the roster, and he's a late round pick out of NC State who can deliver both between the tackles as a guy with low center of gravity and a little bit more heft than Johnson. But he also has really good third down skills as a receiver and blocker. And I could see how this team may look at him and say, you know what, if Days plays well enough, we'll let Johnson walk. Hyde, if he plays well enough, he can be a good committee player or reserve for us now that we have Nick Chubb. Now that brings us to this former University of Georgia back. And I think a lot of people describe him as a hammer, that at least Bucky Brooks has with NFL Network. And I've heard that repeated by Daniel Jeremiah. I've heard that repeated by a number of different prominent NFL analysts who do a really good job of looking at tape. But even so, sometimes you can kind of get a label in your head about what a player is and isn't. And I think that they've mischaracterized Nick Chubb. And that's been a pervasive thing that, you know, the qualities that they've talked about him or linked with him have kind of been parroted around in the draft community and in the football fan community. Because Nick Chubb is far more than just a hammer. Yeah, he's in the 230 range or close to it, and he's a low center of gravity back with a lot of strength and great contact balance. He's got one. He probably has the best contact balance of any runner in this draft class. I mean, he's that good on that level, and you could see it at that Oklahoma game where he had, you know, multiple defenders hit him in the legs, and he bounced off of it and then run for, you know, well over 45 yards for a touchdown in that Rose Bowl game. But what you need to understand is that he also has the acceleration and change of direction speed that is on par with Saquon Barkley. His strength is on par with Saquon Barkley. This is a guy that can win on with a big run in any given play. And it's something that, while they talk about him as a hammer, just go to the Cleveland Browns site and listen to the phone conversation that they have with him. When they selected him, they hand the phone off to Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, same offensive coordinator and coach who has worked with Jamal Charles and Le'Veon Bell, two guys who have that breakaway ability. And the first thing, one of the first things he says after that he's, you know, excited about Chubb coming in here is that Chubb is his kind of back because he's capable of breaking it from anywhere. So that's not a sledgehammer. That's a sledgehammer with jets. And, you know, this is a guy with, you know, mid 4.5 speed and with acceleration that is literally hundreds of a second different than Barkley, with three cone, you know, times that are in the elite tier of running backs. When you watch him accelerate, it's sudden. When you watch him change direction, it's sudden. The metrics show that clearly, but the film even shows a lot more. And the reason that I have him as the top-rated back that I've graded in the past 5 years, yeah, the past 5 years, over just a little bit over Gurley and Elliott and Fournette and McCaffrey and Barkley, is that athletic ability, that power combined with his decision-making. His decision-making is so mature. This is not a guy who, with all his athletic ability, tries to take more than what's available when the down-and-distance situation of a play dictates that he just get the hard yards. And the hard yards sometimes are a short loss or just a small gain. And he usually gets small gains in situations that most people would lose yards. But even so, he understands that he needs to keep that playbook as open as possible for his coaching staff, and that trying to reverse field or trying to dance a little bit too much and or hesitate and turn away or cut back or bounce outside on plays that he shouldn't take that action, he resists that urge. Saquon Barkley doesn't resist that urge. He does that way too often. He's kind of got that Reggie Bush, CJ Spiller, Lawrence Maroney syndrome, something that Jamaal Charles and LeSean McCoy grew out of. But Nick Chubb never had that issue. He rarely makes those types of plays. He's going to stay on schedule, but he's also capable, like Barkley, of breaking those runs. He's also more capable breaking tackles. Now, a lot of people talk about yards after contact. And if you look at Saquon Barkley's yards after contact, it's going to be really impressive. But the way yards after contact is charted most of the time is you can have someone just lay a hand on your leg as you're running. And if they don't get a wrap, but they just hit the guy's leg, that's yards after contact. So someone brushes against your leg or slaps your leg and doesn't really change your balance, and you run another 50 yards, you're getting 50 yards after contact as a part of that equation. What I would rather see scored or charted is yards through contact, and define the contact differently. Define that contact as a wrap, that you actually got a hold temporarily on the player. You're actually able to grab and hold on, or hit and hit in a way where you're a good portion of your body presented an obstacle to that player's progress. And define it in ways where there's a real obstacle there and that you're eliminating some of these just, windshield wiper type of hits that you get. And if you do that, I would tell you that you would see that a player like Nick Chubb would be, as good as he was yards after contact, he would be even better at yards through contact. So when you look at, Chubb's maturity and you factor that in with his athletic ability, it's something that I think a lot of people overlook is that combination of factors. They just see him as a hammer. And part of that's because he worked with Sony Michel, and Sony Michel was a 5-star prospect. But you have to understand that when teams use two backs together, it doesn't mean that one back isn't good at the thing that the other back is used for. Sometimes that's the case, but it isn't the case with what Georgia did. It wasn't the case with the University of Miami when they had to platoon guys like Edgerrin James and, Clinton Portis and Najee Davenport and Willis McGahee and Frank Gore. Those guys were complete backs, most of them, and they were platooned, but people overlooked them sometimes. And Georgia has had that kind of great class since they brought in Isaiah Crowell, and then he kind of flunked out because of some behavior issues. But, you start with Crowell, and then you bring in Gurley and Marshall, and then you have Chubb and Michelle, and now DeAndre Swift. I mean, this has been a fantastic class of backs at that university, one after the other. And when that happens, you know, in order to keep these guys coming in, you have to satisfy them by getting them a prominent role. So Michelle's a little bit better as a pass protector, and he was probably the best pass protector in this running back class. He's a little bit better of a receiver, but Chubb caught over 20 balls as a freshman. If you look at some of that tape, he's made some impressive catches. Michelle is also a little bit more, I would say, a little bit better with his balance, turning the edge as a outside runner. So they used him a little bit more on runs where he could bounce things outside. Chubb is a slightly better interior runner and a little bit more mature of an interior runner, but it doesn't take away from what Michelle did. So you kind of get the point of what I'm talking about here is that this is a complete back. And the Browns realize that. And I think that the Browns basically stole one of the best running backs in this class. And I say stole because people look at that injury with him as well, and they combine that with the idea that he was a thumper only. And then they look at the injury and say, well, what he was as a freshman, he's not the same as he was. But this guy came back from a three ligament tear. It wasn't an ACL. Came back from a tear within 9 months and carried the ball 32 times against North Carolina. This is a very athletic defense that sends players to the NFL based on their athleticism alone. And this is a guy that carried the load for them in the opener for over 200 yards, over 30 times. Had a 55-yard run at the end of the game for a second touchdown, beating a cornerback who had the same field, same side angle of the in pursuit, and had the angle to run him down, and he beat him for 50 yards. So you look at all of these different factors with him, and it becomes clear to me that people just have not put everything together with him just yet. I anticipate him to come into Brown's camp, be no worse than a committee starter, and develop into the full-time starter by season's end as long as he can stay healthy. And I don't see any reason why he won't. He's been healthy for really the past 2 years since that major injury. So, he's a guy with terrific burst, great maturity, all-around game. I think Cleveland's got the best back they've had in the past 30 years. And I know that that's a crazy statement. And some people will say, well, you're a Browns fan. You must be a Georgia fan. I worked at the University of Georgia for 10 years. I graduated from school for 10 years. I was even, kind of softly asked through an editor about my interest in maybe writing a book about the history of the University of Georgia, which I declined. I've never been to a Georgia game. I work literally minutes from the stadium because I'm busy studying prospects from all over the country and running a business doing that. Haven't had time. I was never a college football fan. I just happened to work at the school. So just something for you to know. And as far as a Browns fan's concerned, since they left in the mid-90s, and since I started this business, 13 years ago, this has been more of a job than it has been a passion. My passion is evaluating players. My passion usually isn't following a team. So just kind of want to give you that as just, a little bit of inside information in case that you're wondering about that. So let's move on. I'm going to kind of do a speed round with the rest of these guys, but I thought it was important to talk about why I like Chubb as much as I do, and you can find a lot more analysis, and I've done 4 or 5 videos on my site at www.mattwaldmanrsp.com, and you can find also some Twitter moments on him at Matt Waldman. So let's go to Ronald Jones. I think the Buccaneers landed an electric runner. I think he's capable of every down upside. He's kind of a player in the vein of Chris Johnson in his prime. He's one of the most sudden backs in this draft class. Don't worry about the metrics that you saw. He was dealing with a hamstring injury at the comp, during the combine, and even his pro day didn't heal fully. I think he's a guy that when you look at Dirk Koetter's run game, it's more of a zone game, but he has some times where he likes to do some nifty plays on the outside using gap style plays. And gap style plays really befit runners with suddenness, guys who can get downhill in a hurry and just zoom through that crease that's being set up by that pulling lineman. And I think that when you look at what the Buccaneers are trying to do, you're going to see him do well on cutbacks, on zone schemes, but also he's going to even provide a more effective presence in the perimeter run game early on. Now, this is a young offensive line, so there's a little bit of boom-bust potential when it comes to their development, and that may hinder Ronald Jones early on. But they have a fairly experienced crew. You know, Peyton Barber's an underrated player. I think he's, you know, a nice low-to-the-ground runner who does after-contact balance pretty well and who has good vision. And he can be, a short-yardage player and even a complement to Jones and used a little bit more often if need be. Charles Sims is kind of worn out as welcome. I think at this point I don't think that this team is sold on him really being anything for them, even though he's a talented guy who can catch the ball. He just hasn't worked out, and I think some of that probably will have to do with things that the team would only tell you about if you worked for the team. Jacquizz Rodgers is a favorite. You know, he's versatile. He understands the offense. He's a really good receiver. He's shown the ability to carry the load despite his lack of height, and that he's not unbelievably big, but he's strong enough and he's skilled enough in terms of his vision. So I think they've got a decent running back group in there, even without Doug Martin anymore. It's just a matter of this line maturing. And if it does, Ronald Jones could be a real star. If not, you're going to see some flashes that are up and down in terms of game production from Jones and the rest of this running back class. But he's certainly a fun pick who's a better receiver than you would expect. And that suddenness is really going to be interesting to see. Now, one of the best fits, I think, of this round was Courtland Sutton to Denver. I wasn't high on Courtland Sutton in terms of my rankings pre-draft, but I did have him as a borderline immediate contributor for a team in terms of his overall draft grade. It's just that there's a very little separation among these receivers this year. And Sutton's issues are, you know, catching the ball with his hands and making sure that they're striking both hands at the fingertips so that he's not fighting the ball. He fights a lot of balls, lets them through his hands, tries to clap down on the ball too much. His route running can be a little bit iffy at times. I've seen some issues with effort at times where he gets frustrated, and you see some questionable issues with incurring penalties that he really shouldn't have tried to commit, and he really compounded problems for his team. But when you look where he landed, I mean, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, these guys are craftsmen at the position. And Demaryius Thomas was probably one of the most meaningful players that I've evaluated, because I learned so many lessons about how a receiver can develop and how they can develop in the NFL, because I didn't have a high grade on him. He was probably one of my biggest mistakes, in 13 years that I've been doing this, because I just didn't anticipate that he could grow at the rate that he did as a technician. And a lot of that came at the hands of, you know, being able to really develop under Peyton Manning. And if he didn't have Peyton Manning, that might have been different in terms of the height of his upside. But, you know, the fact that he was able to work with Manning at the level that he did, and Manning's such a good teacher, he really became a complete route runner. And this really aids Courtland Sutton, because as Matt Harmon, my buddy who works at NFL .com and for fantasy footballers and does reception perception, you know, he compared Sutton to Demaryius Thomas, and I can see that comparison, you know, and having a chance to sit behind Thomas for a couple of years and Emmanuel Sanders for a couple of years and learn how to work and learn what it takes and have somebody who started like Sutton, kind of a raw player, and be able to say, this is how I got here. You know, do what I do. Here's what you need to work on. I think this is the best possible landing spot for Sutton. So I'm really happy with what I see there. Mike Gesicki, you know, listen, he's a metrics crowd favorite, and I can understand why that is. And he catches the ball really well. He's very smooth in that regard. But when you watch his balance, He's the type of guy that he encounters any type of contact or the threat of contact, and he either slows down or he gets tipped over. He's not a really rugged guy at this stage of his game. And I think it stems from that he just doesn't have a good setup of footwork patterns to be able to lean on and react to the speed of instinct with, so that he's running from a balanced position because he gets knocked over far too easily against physical play. And when I think of Gesicki and, you know, some of the flaws that he has and some of the positives that he has, it reminds me a lot of Michael Agnew, who also was drafted by Miami. Reminds me a little bit of Thomas Duarte, who's on the depth chart in Miami. Reminds me a little bit of Gavin Escobar, who played for the Cowboys, who was also a favorite because of his metrics. He was also at the end of the depth chart in Miami. So if you see what I'm talking about here, Miami seems to have a type. And I hate to say this to Dolphin fans, but at least when it comes to the tight end position, in the same way that it's been this way for the Ravens with wide receivers, and for a while it was with the Patriots with wide receivers, sometimes there's teams that you look at them and you go, you know, the reason that you have a headache right now at this position is that you keep banging your head up against the wall and you don't realize that's what you're doing. And when you look at this depth chart, I'm worried that the Dolphins kind of have their... are banging their head up against the wall because they're drafting the same type of player. Now, I love that Anthony Fasano is there because while he's not a great fantasy option for fantasy footballers listening to this podcast, he's a veteran who knows how to block. He's known for his blocking. He's been around a lot of good tight ends. He's helped develop guys, at least being a mentor in that tight end room, like Travis Kelce, Jason Witten. He's been around those guys, and he's been helpful to some of those guys. So I think that he'll be helpful if Mike Gesicki has the potential to develop into an inline tight end, or Marquise Gray has that potential, or even A.J. Derby. But see, Derby and Gray are on the last year of their contract and have a prove-it deal like Escobar. Gesicki, is he really more of a Zach Ertz type of guy or a Michael Agnew type of guy with more upside? That's what we're about to find out, but Miami has been kind of a graveyard on that level for tight ends lately in terms of free agents that they pick up or guys that they draft. So I'm a little worried there. Kerryon Johnson. Listen, man, when you look at the Lions' offensive line, it's one of the most athletic crews in the league, and then they just added Frank Ragnow to the list. Matt Patricia, the new coach, hasn't really said what they're going to do scheme-wise. But if you look at the Patriots, they're usually pretty versatile with their run game with a mix of zone and different types of gap style plays, and they can get pretty creative. And they have the athletes to do that. And Kerryon Johnson fits that athletic mold as a running back to execute that. And when you look at the depth chart, LeGarrette Blount, he's kind of that ambassador of that Patriots run game who will be helpful in that running back room and can also still get the job done because he's got incredible flexibility with his hips to change direction, and he's much quicker than you would expect, and he's a big guy who can run physically. You know, Theo Riddick, probably going to play that James White role. As much as I loved Amir Abdullah, you know, the fumbles, the injuries, and then trying too hard to make big plays have kind of put him on the outside looking in, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to try and deal him, or he's going to be and wind up on a new team within... no later within the next, 6 to 12 months. So when you look at this, Kerryon Johnson has a pretty good shot of starting or at least contributing early on. And I just love how athletic and versatile he is in terms of running zone or gap. And I think it's a really good fit because he can be physical. So he's got that suddenness along with that agility and athletic ability to be tough, break plays away, and really do it all. He's going to have to get better as a pass protector, though, if it's really going to show up now, or at least right away, that is. Dante Pettis in San Francisco. Listen, he was my top receiver, and a lot of people are like, what? I never even heard of him. Mike Mayock seemed puzzled by that, but you know what? I mean, listen, we all have our blind spots, and I'd say that when I listen to, I've listened to him over the years, he's kind of had his blind spots with some receivers and running backs. Skill players are kind of his blind spot at times. And Pettis, he labeled as more of a slot receiver. Couldn't think of a better fit for him, though, as an outside receiver, studying behind Pierre Garçon for a year with Jimmy Garoppolo, who is such a good pinpoint passer in a West Coast offense. Dante Pettis might be one of the best route runners in this class. He's very good off the line of scrimmage. He can tell a quick, efficient story, really drops his weight well in the cuts, and he's an excellent pass catcher in tight coverage. And I'm talking about tighter coverage than my buddy Matt Harmon tracks. You know, he tracks it, you know, with one arm or more distance away. And I track it a little bit more on the level of, and I don't do it as astutely as Harmon does. I mean, Harmon does such a great job of really compiling the numbers. I don't track every game or as high of a sample on that rigorous of a level. What I do is I'm looking for a very defined set of certain skills, and I'm not looking for the numeric percentage. I'm just looking for enough times that I see the behavior. And when I look at Pettis's behavior, he's very good at making plays where guys are really glued to him and, you know, shorter than an arm's distance away. And to me, that's an even higher, a slightly higher standard than what you would see. So, you know, I like what I see from him, and I think that he's going to get a shot to where maybe he won't be as promising short term as Calvin Ridley is in Atlanta. I think long term he has just as much promise, because Garcon's 31 years old, and you know, you need a guy who can be that every down threat all over the field, and I think Pettis can offer that to Garoppolo within a couple of years, opposite Marquise Goodwin as the deep threat and Trent Taylor as that slot guy. And then you can also move Pettis around, and he's so good after the catch that with the pinpoint accuracy that Garoppolo shows to lead people, Pettis is going to be a guy that I think could really become that favorite for Garoppolo long term. Now then we got Christian Kirk in Arizona, and when you take a look at what Kirk has to offer, he's a slot receiver who might be also deliver outside. Mike McCoy right now, he's had experience in a West Coast offense, the Coryell offense, the Hart Perkins system. He's trying to plan to look at his team and match his scheme around his talent. So there's a lot of kind of variability with what Kirk might do this year, especially with Fitzgerald playing that big slot role the past couple of years. Will he stay there? Will they ask Kirk to be outside? Bryce Butler's in the equation. You got young guys like Nelson, J.J. Nelson, Chad Williams, and Carlton Agudosi, who are both, you know, Williams and Agudosi are big, you know, athletes with really strong skills. I think when you take a look at this, I think Kirk and Fitzgerald will probably trade off in as flankers and slot players. That would be my guess, but I like the upside early on, but we'll like upside later, but I don't know about early on just yet, because it just depends on how McCoy's going to, you know, create this offense. Dallas Goedert, I think in a few years, 3 to 4 years down the road, that's when you see his top upside. I like the pick for Philadelphia, because if he can develop into an every down blocker, you know, him and Ertz in that two tight end set using some of those spread kind of, you know, run pass option RPO type of looks and getting those quick hitters up the seam can make them a little more unpredictable but still have a power running game. So I like what they're planning on doing there, and having Richard Rodgers in the tight end room, who's played, you know, in the league a little bit and is good enough to contribute now if they need him, but can be a little bit of help along with Ertz to help Goddard develop as a blocker. That would be helpful. So I think it's a good match. He just may not help you out right away, other than maybe being a guy who's running free in certain sub packages as the second tight end, kind of what Hunter Henry did a couple years ago. Anthony Miller with Chicago. When you look at Miller, I think he's got a really bright future. And when you look at the depth chart, Allen Robinson, Kevin White, Robinson's coming off injury. White's lost some confidence due to injuries. And, you know, there's talk from last year that he needed to really be coached up a bit to get his confidence back and start playing well. Then you've got Taylor Gabriel, who I think Kyle Shanahan really understood, but Steve Sarkisian didn't. And you saw kind of the ups and downs of his production as a result of that. And I think Gabriel's the guy that's really going to be the pivot point between whether Miller's going to be a factor right away or whether it's going to take him a year or two to get his opportunity. And we have a new coach, got a young quarterback. What's going on in Chicago? What I do know is that you're going to want to value Anthony Miller at the level you would value, you know, guys like Pettis and Ridley and Moore. You just may have to wait a little bit longer on it, because he does have that outside upside that Gabriel may not or may never be labeled of having, even though I think he's a very good route runner, who's often kind of characterized as not being quite as good, by some coaches in terms of how they use him. So Miller's one to watch. Darius Geis. Now listen, Darius Geis is certainly a top five back, and I don't know what to believe in terms of why he slipped. Being a second round pick isn't a big deal in terms of how you look at talent, but when you see that he could have been a top 20 player, that's a big impact on his wallet that he dropped to the second round like he did. And they're speculating that, that it's kind of a, there's speculation on three sides really here: Geis's camp, the LSU, and the NFL. The NFL's saying that he didn't do well on pre-draft visits, that he seemed lazy, that all he wanted to do was play video games, that he got in a fight or nearly got in a fight, that he fired his agent during the middle of it, that there was a lot of unprofessional behavior. They also, there's some accusations that that LSU swept some things under the rug, and that were big embarrassing issues that, or a big embarrassing issue that was swept under the rug, and LSU's denied that, at least from some channels. What do you believe? Well, I guess the way that I look at it is this: we don't know what to believe at this point. Some people might look at this and say that because Geis snitched on the NFL and said, I didn't like the questions that you asked in these interviews that asked whether my, mother was a prostitute and, or whether I was gay. This was the NFL trying to pay him back with kind of some petty accusations just to drop him enough without, and make it a kind of a speculative thing that can't really be proven that they did anything, to drop him, or that could be proven that they were slandering him in a way that they could sue, that he could sue them for, or do any, do any damage to them. And there may be merit to all of that. I don't know. All I can tell you is that on the field, Darius Geis is a top five back who can catch. He's a pretty good blocker who can get better at it. He's a very good runner in gap or zone, and he can start right away and be a productive every down back. And in Washington, they need that. Chris Thompson, scat back with Pro Bowl potential, but he has the durability of a free agent. He just can't stay healthy. Samaje Perine got better as the year went along, but obviously they weren't excited about what they saw when they could get their hands on a player like Geis, who's shown more burst and more big play ability. And Jay Gruden tends to be impatient with his players. Robert Kelly, listen, he did a really good job, but he's not the guy that gives you that, top end athletic ability. He's a good, solid, rosterable player. So when you look at Geis, very, very intriguing. You probably want to value him highly, but I would keep one eye open on Samaje Perine and Thompson and Kelly, just in case there really are issues with him that prevent him from being able to play every week, because of whatever's going on off the field or his behavior and how that jibes with team with the team. And you'd say, well, shouldn't Washington have been able to do their due diligence and determine that, and they know what they have here? Well, teams take chances, and Washington's been known to take chances on guys and it not pan out all that well, or that Daniel Snyder to be a bit of take some foolish risks from time to time. So, I keep an eye peeled on that. James Washington, listen, Steelers have a pretty good identity of who they are. They got rid of Martavis Bryant. They bring in a guy in Washington who's a worker, who's a multi-sport athlete, who understands how to use his frame. He gets separation on defenders, not only with his hands and feet, but with his burst. He tracks the ball extremely well, and he may not be a super speedster, but he's a guy that I think can become a complete receiver in this league, and he won't be asked to right away. He'll be used in ways to get prime matchups because of the fact that Juju Smith-Schuster can play outside and inside. Antonio Brown can play outside and inside. And Ben Roethlisberger's still a terrific veteran. You've got Le'Veon Bell in that equation. I think it's a really strong fit where he can help out immediately, in a sub-package roles with some big plays and develop into more. DJ Chark with Jacksonville. Didn't like DJ Chark as much as everyone else. I think he's a, speedster who can catch the ball, but his hands technique like Courtland Sutton's was lacking, and it's inconsistent, and I think that's going to hurt him a little bit more. And I see him as more of a Ted Ginn, Devery Henderson type of player, which, you know, when you look at this Jacksonville roster, I think there are still better wide receivers on this Jacksonville roster who have a lower draft status than what we've seen from Chark this year. So it's an interesting pick, but I don't think he's going to make a huge impact right away. I do think Royce Freeman's going to make a huge impact right away. This is a guy that has terrific footwork. He's got that great low center of gravity despite terrific size. He's kind of like a souped-up, more athletic C.J. Anderson with a better track record for being healthy. So I think the Broncos did a strong job of picking him, and it was probably one of my favorite picks so far of the skill positions. We'll return to Pittsburgh and look at Mason Rudolph. Look, Rudolph gets a chance to develop behind Ben Roethlisberger. He's a good, you know, we all hear about his deep ball prowess. He's got more mobility than you would expect if he can keep that knee healthy. He was playing on a knee injury, it looked like to me, wearing a brace when in earlier years he wasn't, and he seemed a little bit more mobile. I think that he processes the game pretty well, but he has some moments where his short and intermediate game have moments and bouts of inaccuracy that are kind of streaky and hard to explain sometimes with what his technique looks like there. He can rush his technique sometimes, and that may be some of the problem. But you don't usually see a guy who's got a great accuracy in the vertical game, and a short and intermediate game are the ones that you have problems with. So he's got to really work on that. And his processing the game has some good points, but again, reading certain coverages, dealing with pressure and resetting and firing are going to be things that he's going to have to get better at. And those are some of the harder things to deal with. So we'll see if he gets out of the woods there. There's promise there, though, and I like where they picked him, even though quarterback development always is so difficult and it's so bleak after the first round. But again, I just try and focus on the talent and fit, and I think that if they were going to pick a guy on the second day, this was the one to do. So, you know, I've got some optimism there. Michael Gallup, smart receiver. He reminded me of Robert Woods with a little more physicality. In Dallas, he reads zones pretty well. I think he'll be a good worker for, you know, someone who will develop a rapport with Dak Prescott. And if he does that, I think you're going to get a guy who can really become that possession player who moves the chains and can occasionally deliver the play, big play and play action. And so that's an exciting prospect for him. I don't know if he's as strong of a player as some people have rated him, but the fact that he's going to a place of need and the fact that he's an intelligent player who displays some good route running, and he's going to be with a good quarterback, I feel like there's reason for optimism. Mark Andrews in Baltimore. All right, so second tight end that they picked there. I think he has potential to be a blocker, but there are a lot of people that say he seems allergic to it. He's a big wide receiver who converted, but he's got the size to be a blocker. I think he's done some things in the red zone where you can see him really doing a good job of at least faking the ability to block on play action and getting free. He's not extremely fast or quick for a tight end, but he's good enough to get into those seams and get some yards after the catch. He's a smart, savvy receiver. If he can really develop the toughness to be the blocker they want, then you've got something there, and he could be a really nice pairing with Hayden Hurst. The question is, you know, did the Ravens see that with him? You know, do they have a reason to believe that he's going to become a tough blocker who will develop on that level? I mean, they thought that with Max Williams, and Max Williams hasn't really been anything at this point to speak of. And when you have a guy like, you know, Nick Boyle, who's not a great athlete, who I'm just surprised that he earned the job that he did over Max Williams, that tells you about Boyle a lot, but it also tells you that Williams is really underachieved. And this team has just really underachieved with receivers and tight ends throughout the years when it comes to drafting them. So we'll see about Mark Andrews. Traquan Smith, I didn't love him either. And the Saints also seem to have, you know, until Michael Thomas, you look at the big play threat receivers they've picked, like Robert Meacham and Devery Henderson. I just haven't really been excited about what they do there. But Smith has moments where he adjusts to the ball really well. He has to get better at his hands technique. I think his routes are pretty decent. He's a good athlete with some upside there. But I thought they reached a little bit for him, though I know a lot of people who love him. So that's the second and third round of the skill players in this class. I know I spent most of the time on Chubb as the headliner, but I felt like he was deserving of that, and you knew I was going to do it if you follow me at all over the past few years. And if you hadn't, and you're a Browns fan and you're checking this out, then you kind of get an idea of my thought process with him, and you can find out a lot more at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication. I'll tell you a little bit about that. It's a 1,734-page publication, pre-draft guide that gives you my entire process of how I review these players and study it on film. And this is something that media reads, that there are guys in the league who read, there are, coaches and consultants to pro players who read this. Fantasy owners love it, obviously. And you can get a lot out of it because I'm transparent about showing my work, and it's defined from, a really strong process. I don't always make the right picks, obviously. I have a lot of ones that I get wrong because it's about, the conclusions that I make and the projections that I make based off that process. But the process is good, and that's helped me develop as an evaluator of talent. And it's something that I continue to work on and develop based on my past background with process improvement and process management. So you can get the RSP at mattwaldman.com. You can check out a video tour over at mattwaldmanrsp.com. And you also get a post-draft guide when you buy the Rookie Scouting Portfolio for $21.95. And that's going to be something that I'm already writing right now, but it'll be available within a week of the NFL draft, after the NFL draft. And it's a great analysis of scheme fit. A lot of what I talked about will be in that in a more structured way. It gives you cheat sheets, analyzes average draft position, scheme fit looks. You'll love it. So give it a look. 10% of every sale goes to Darkness to Light, which is an organization that trains people and organizations to prevent sexual abuse of children and also to help them deal with the situation when it arises so that they don't compound the issue the way that it happened at, Michigan State or Penn State or different government agencies or schools when it comes to these issues. Because sometimes the way that adults react to the issue can compound the problem and the trauma for the child. So it's a great organization, and you get to do something that you love and contribute back to an organization that's fighting this problem. So thanks again for listening. You can check out more of my work again at mattwaldmanrsp.com or my YouTube channel, the RSP Film Room, or follow me on Twitter at Matt Waldman.